Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, so page 66. Nard Muni continued, the 10 kinds of air acting within the body are compared to the spokes of the chariot's wheel, and the top and bottom of the wheel itself are called religion and irreligion. The living entity in the bodily conception of life is the owner of the chariot. The Vedic mantra pranava is the bow, the pure living entity itself is the arrow, and the target is the supreme being. Srila Prabhupada comments, 10 kinds of life air always flow within the material body. They are called prana, apana, samana, vyana, udana, naga, kurma, krikala, devadatta, and dananjaya. They are compared here to the spokes of the chariot wheels. The life air is the energy for all of the living beings' activities, which are sometimes religious and sometimes irreligious. Thus, religion and irreligion are said to be the upper and lower portions of the chariot's wheel. Nard Muni continued, in the conditioned stage, one's conceptions of life are sometimes polluted by passion and ignorance, which are exhibited by attachment, hostility, greed, lamentation, illusion, fear, madness, false prestige, insults, fault-finding, deception, envy, intolerance, passion, bewilderment, hunger, and sleep. Anything left out? Okay. All of these enemies, all of these are enemies. Sometimes one's conceptions are also polluted by goodness. On a good day, right? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments, the actual aim of life is to go back home, back to Godhead. But there are many hindrances created by the three modes of material nature, sometimes by a combination of rajagun and tamagun, the modes of passion and ignorance, and sometimes by the mode of goodness. So many times we think, oh, if everybody was nice and good, then everything would be perfect and everything like that. But how will that ever be perfect? Because the consciousness is then polluted by this material nice arrangement. So it's only when there's Krishna consciousness that will actually be what's proper. Does that make sense? So, therefore, since it's Krishna conscious, then you have to do an activity to express your Krishna consciousness. Therefore, you'll use the best possible, which will generally be from the mode of goodness. Right? That's the recommendation. But if you're doing it in the mode of goodness, it's actually a contamination. So it's not that things are good and nice, that's what makes it perfect. No, you're Krishna conscious, that's what makes it perfect. Very important distinction here. You see, Nard Muni's always pressing on the primary aspect. Because otherwise, secondary will catch that quite quickly. If we just said everybody has to be good, has to be nice, and gave a few details of what we expect, then it's easy. You just do that, and then you feel I'm religious, and then the rest of the time you do whatever you like. Right? But here, the point is no, it's about doing what's good for Krishna consciousness. That's the actual position. Right? So, then, that means the secondary is used, but that makes the secondary more complicated. See, if you leave out the primary, and just focus on certain secondary that match, you know, our, how you say, psychophysical nature, you know, the particular environment and all that, then it becomes very easy. But when we shift it to the primary, that's actually what Krishna consciousness is about, what religion is about, then that's where things, people can't quite understand what's happening. Yes?
Shouldn't it be the opposite? Because primary usually is supposed to be something that we all catch.
We catch it, but then applying it, because we're so, the point is we're so conditioned to secondary that we hear it, it makes sense because it actually is correct.
And then we forget.
And then we get bewildered when we go to apply it. because we get distracted by the secondary. You know, like that. So that's the things, because if we don't see the nice qualities that we're expecting, what we would consider as religious qualities, then we'll say there's something wrong. Which on one sense, yes, there is. It means there's contamination. But even if somebody's doing something properly, we'll consider it contamination. You know, we just won't see that they're doing properly. You know, it's just like, I remember one temple we're in, Pujari did something wrong. You know, and so how they were dealing, he says, no, but you have to deal with Brahmins like this. No, but he did this, so he can't be a Brahmin. So you can only be a Brahmin if you're perfect in every way. If you ever do anything wrong, then automatically you're something else. Not that Brahmins can make a mistake. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty. Is that therefore then that previous point that Narad Muni was making about showing compassion and trying to train someone, then, you know, is never an option. You know, it's just more of, you know, tarred and feathered, drawn and quartered, you know, do it, you know, the guillotine, do it, you know, like that, you know, the, you know, we can use the Chinese, a thousand cuts, you know, that was really a good one. Like that.
Time for chili.
Yeah, but ever so entertaining. Well, why do you think they do drawn, what's it? Drawn and quartered? Hung, drawn, and quartered. One of them could kill the person, but they drag it out. They only hang them a little bit, not enough to kill them. Then they take them down and that. So, and then they do the next one, then they like that. So people like a show.
Inquisition.
That was just standard, I think, English dealings. It's just, you know, it's like, you know, we talk about the glory of this enlightened Western environment, and it's not necessarily that glorious. You know, it turns into a whole show. One is that it's there so that people actually understand there are reactions to what they do, but people are so in illusion, they think, oh, this is what's happening to them, so that, but they forget that it could happen to themselves. You know, so even though it's so, because it's so commonplace, so in the Vedic system means it's not very because they're, it's being so well taken care of, people are very careful, but that there's so much of this going on means that there's not a great, the government isn't as strong, and then people become complacent. Yeah, so it's that's the problem. So better to train, if you can train. If you can't train, then that's another thing. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay. In the material world, even if one is a philanthropist, a nationalist, and a good man according to materialistic estimations, these conceptions of life form a hindrance to spiritual advancement. Because if those things aren't there, we won't, you know, it's just like somebody's asked, oh, what philanthropic things do we do? How can we impress the people? But who's giving doing the welfare work of giving God consciousness? Teaching people who they actually are. That's real knowledge. So we're giving out real knowledge, you know, that you can practically apply. But that's not seen as philanthropy. So what does it mean? Material philanthropy is actually getting in the way of this person's devotional service. So, yeah. How much more of a hindrance then are hostility, greed, illusion, lamentation, and too much attachment to material enjoyment? Right? So even the nice things get in the way, let alone. That doesn't mean nice things aren't done. The point is, it has to be done in connection with Krishna. So what does philanthropy look like in connection with Krishna? It means giving Krishna consciousness, distributing prasad. Right? That's what it looks like. These other things then, you know, are nice, but then they are a problem. You know? Like, just like this, what is it? Now we're having, yeah, like 3 weeks ago, a particular election happened, and I was hearing from devotees how freaked out are other devotees. You know, so what does that mean? They're that material identification. Yeah, it's like that, yeah.
Well, maybe they're practical. They understand the consequences.
Yes, but at what point does the common man, you know, get up in the morning, right? Then I think the thing, then there's the comb, right? And then there's the coffee, and then you go to work, right? And then they sit there all day, and then they come back, and then, you know, some variety of eating in the evening, whatever that means, a TV dinner or what, you know, whatever is that, you know, order out for Chinese or a pizza or something, and then watch some telly and then go to bed. How is any of that going to matter, you know, on the top? Well, you know, that doesn't matter who's up, you know. So the guy's wife changes the curtains in, you know, the Eleanor Roosevelt room or something. You know, it's like, well, you know, oh man, that's going to be the end of the world, right? You know, your television won't work anymore. You can't get reception or something, right? So that's the point, is it doesn't really affect. But at the same time, then at least not on that side at this point. On the other side, yes, there are effects depending upon what's there, but on that side there's not. But the point is it's not about the country. It's about what do you do in the situation that's there. Right? In other words, they were doing really well when it was restrictive, right? And then when it opens up, it became very good, and then it gets all kinds of weird, and now it becomes restrictive again. So in theory, then everybody should become more serious and get, you know, like that. So that's the point. What may be a difficulty for the materialist is not necessarily for the devotees.
And the opposite.
Huh?
And the opposite.
Yes, that's also there. To progress towards the target of Vishnu, which is our self-interest, one must become very powerful in conquering these various hindrances or enemies. Right? And Narad Muni didn't just say that. He actually gave the technique. That's the whole point, is he can train, right? He's saying about this nice list here, you know, all our friends, like that. So then he gave the technique, what you can do to get rid of those. In other words, one should not be attached to being a good man or a bad man in this material world. One should be attached to being a devotee. Then whether people see that as good or bad, that's another thing. So when we're attached to, no, but we have to act like this, or people will think we're crazy or think we're weird or that, that means we're attached to being a good man. So it's an hindrance. You know, especially when our definition of a good man or their definition of a good man may not be exactly, you know, that, you know, good, right? In this material world, so-called goodness and badness are the same because they consist of the three modes of material nature. One must transcend this material nature, right? So one say, oh, but then we don't care for it. But if you're working in pure goodness, naturally, pure goodness has the form of goodness, but it's without any tinge of the modes. Right? In other words, goodness means there's some passion and ignorance in there. But pure goodness means there's no passion, no ignorance, no karma, no jnana. What was it? The famous song, No Modes, No Cry. Yeah. Yeah, like that. So. Yeah.
I was thinking that as a devotee, we join with a particular identity, whether strong or weak.
Yes.
And then it appears that before reaching the stage of Bhav, It becomes
purified. See, that I think Sri Ramaraj was explaining that for the Madhyama, it's not that the conditioned nature is not there, but he's just engaging it. It's been purified, and he's engaging it in the Lord's service. So it's not necessarily an identity with it, like in the neophyte. The neophyte will identify with the conditioning. So he is pointing out that the Madhyama doesn't identify with it, but it's not that he's not comfortable with it. You understand? In other words, the tools that he has at hand from his conditioning, he knows how to use them nicely in Krishna's service. So he's comfortable with it. but is being engaged in Krishna's service. So therefore, then one gets ruchi, one gets asakti, like this. You move on. It's dynamic. But it's different from sarva-dharmam parityaja, where you're starting with just that surrender to Krishna and that service to Krishna, and then engaging the conditioning. Right? So it means the neophyte's attached to the conditioning, the madhyama is comfortable with it, and for the uttama, it doesn't matter. It could be anything. Like you see when we're talking about the alwars. You have ones that are great Brahmins and highly respected like that, and then you have ones that are they're common people. A Shudra, I forget what his name was, one of them. I told the story. He's a Shudra, he's walking, somehow he has to walk through the Brahminical, Agara, their area, the quarter. And the Brahmins are sitting on there because they always have these front verandas and that, and so that's where they'll gather for, stuff like that, teaching and talking and not, anything that's not related within the house. Because then from there you go in, there's the room for the swing, and then after that then starts the living area and then the kitchen like this. No? Yeah. So then on that outside it's generally a raised platform. They're sitting there and they're chanting their Vedic mantras, but he's a Shudra. And so then as he walks by, they see him, so they stop chanting, because technically you're not supposed to chant Vedic mantras in front of the Shudra. So then, and he's walking past. By the time he gets far enough away where they're comfortable to start chanting, they can't remember where they were chanting. They can't remember the verse. And they're all sitting there, you remember? So then that Alwar, who's a, Shudra, he turns around. He bends over, picks up a blade of grass and splits it. Because that was actually what the verse was talking about. And then then they started chanting. But they didn't quite catch that. How does he know? How does he even know what verse he are? And how does he know what the verse means?
Right? They know he was a Shudra.
You can tell by dress and things like that. So that's why it's also people address according to their occupation. So it's clear what they can do. Just like a policeman's there, you can go to him for help, or hand 2 rupees and then you can turn right when you're not supposed to, right? No, 10 rupees now, excuse me, sorry. 2 rupees was before. Right?
Places also different.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. Okay. If one is fortunate enough to transcend all this so-called goodness and badness and come to the platform of devotional service by the mercy of Krishna and the Guru, his life becomes successful. In this regard, one must be very bold so that he can conquer these enemies of Krishna consciousness. Not caring for the good and bad of this material world, one must boldly propagate Krishna consciousness. So that's, one says, boldly propagate. So it's not a matter of pride. Sometimes it's taken boldness as pride. No, but the point is who's the authority? Right? Shastra's authority, Guru's authority. So you're speaking strongly on their behalf. So simply as their assistant, their servant. So it's not pride. Pride is when you think, I'm doing this, or it's my thing, or that kind of thing, where you're trying to gain something from it. When it's just a matter of trying to assist, then it's there. So that's why there's bold preaching. Because otherwise, we'll go on in what we're doing. Like someone's doing something, well, this is good. He dresses badly. This is not good. So, but what's good about dressing nicely? If we ask, why dress nicely? What's good? Right at that point, then, what's going to be said? It looks nice, or it's good, or people like it. Okay, and why should people like something? You understand? Just immediately you're just going to run into, there is no answer. It's just conditioning. Because someone else, they're dressing so, like that they're dressing badly, and someone else will go, what's the problem? So why is it not a problem that he's dressing? You understand? So that's the thing, good and bad, they're both just conditioning. What's the reason that it's good? What's the reason that it's bad? That can't be explained. People will think bad of us, if like this, then what's the problem with that? Oh, that's obvious. How is it obvious? You understand? So that's the point. It can't be explained. Why? Because it's pranamoy. Where does pranamoy come from? The voice of the people. Why did the people say it? Why would we know? All we know is they're saying it and we're going along, right? Right? What do you call it? There's a bandwagon going by, we get on it. You know, it's happening, you know? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that that can't be the standard of Krishna consciousness. We base anything on that, it is already an obstacle. Saying, no, this will make Krishna conscious, but it won't make Krishna conscious any better. Only thing is if you're teaching how it's pleasing to Krishna, then it has some meaning. Oh, of course it's that. No, but it's not that. It was conditioning why one thought that. That's all. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, yeah, it's just conditioning. So, therefore, one has to, the reasons one's doing things has to be because of Krishna consciousness. There must be an explanation. That's why Dharma is there. Then you can explain why something's done. But even that, there must be study, there must be inquiry. Otherwise, there's plenty of people who are just caught up in the rituals itself, in the form itself, and don't look into the detail. And so, therefore, these two groups, those who just do it without asking, and those who don't do it and don't ask, they're both not rightly situated. Though one will be pious and one will be impious. That on the material platform, then you can say like that. But as far as spiritual goes, then Rupa Goswami puts them both together, that they both miss the point. Is that? Yeah? Narad Muni continued, as long as one has to accept a material body with its different parts and paraphernalia, which are not fully under one's control, one must have the lotus feet of his superiors, namely his spiritual master and the spiritual master's predecessors. Okay. By their... You expect more to the sentence, but it ended. Okay. By their mercy, one can sharpen the sword of knowledge, and with the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's mercy, one must then conquer the enemies mentioned above. Right? So, with the sword of knowledge, that's how the enemies will be cut down.
Which enemies? He agrees those
ones? He means the ones that he just mentioned here. Passion, ignorance, okay, which are exhibited by attachment, hostility, greed, lamentation, illusion, fear, madness, false prestige, insults, fault-finding, deception, envy, intolerance, passion, bewilderment, hunger, and sleep. All those enemies can be conquered by knowledge. Right? So that's the principle, yes.
With the help of knowledge, you can conquer the enemies.
Yes.
This is only sambandha. Abhideya is also required, application of it.
Yes. But that's why then, without Krishna consciousness, even you've conquered these, then what's the point? See, these are obstacles to devotional service. So you're trying to perform service to please Krishna, but these obstacles get in the way. So therefore, the only importance of clearing these obstacles is that they're no longer a disturbance to devotional service. Not that not having them is the good thing. We'll take it, no, but by not having these, that's the good thing. No, by being Krishna conscious, that's the good thing. These get in the way. Yeah? Okay.
Our biggest illusion is that these enemies can't be conquered or can't be conquered by something else. That's why we get bewildered.
Yeah, we just think that, you know, we will have our dealings with these. Certain ones of them we'll consider okay, sometimes not, or in certain conditions okay or not. You know, depending upon the particular conditioning, right? Hostility, as long as it's to, you know, outside the community, that's fine. Within the community, no. You know, like that. So, different things like that. You know we'll have, so they'll all get in the way. So the point is through knowledge one can give these up. Then one can act it. Because the point is you want to act in Krishna consciousness, that means you want to be able to see things as they are. That means then we take shelter of the lotus feet, the spiritual master, and the predecessors. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas, and then our connection to that line. Right? We have who connects us to Srila Prabhupada and he connects us to the previous acharyas, connects us to Rupa Goswami. In that way, then we're situated properly. So, okay. In this way, the devotee should be able to merge into his own transcendental bliss. And then he may give up his body and resume his spiritual identity. Srila Prabhupada comments. If one seriously desires to return home, back to Godhead, one must therefore become strong enough by pleasing the spiritual master. For thus one gets the weapon with which to conquer the enemy. And one also gets the grace of Krishna. Simply getting the weapon of jnana is insufficient. One must sharpen the weapon by serving the spiritual master and adhering to his instructions. Right? So that when you have knowledge, that which is the sword, that's not enough. It has to be sharp. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, like that. Then the candidate will get the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if we follow the instruction of the spiritual master, that will sharpen the sword of knowledge. Then with the mercy of Krishna, then these enemies can be removed. In general welfare, one must take help from his chariot and horses in order to conquer his enemy. And after conquering his enemies, he may give up the chariot and his paraphernalia. Similarly, as long as one has a human body, one should fully use it to obtain the highest perfection of life, namely going back home, back to Godhead. So, while in the body, use the facilities of the body for Krishna consciousness. That's why the Madhyama doesn't have a problem working with the conditioning. Right? And you're used to it, so it works nicely. So it's not actually a problem. Right? So, but then the point is that at some point, attachment to that condition, all that will be given up. Right? And then we take up the spiritual form, and in that, then we continue our devotional development. Right? Narad Muni continued, otherwise, if one does not take shelter of Achyuta and Baladeva, then the senses acting as the horses and the intelligence acting as the driver, both being prone to material contamination, inattentively bring the body, which acts as the chariot, to the path of sense gratification. Right? So Achyuta means who is, you know, how you say? Infallible. Right? So he's always above the modes. Because you're fallible if you come under the control of the modes. If you're above the modes, then is there. And Baladev, he gives the strength. Right? He gives our non-interest in material life. So makes sense. So when we're serious about serving Krishna and giving up sense gratification, then Baladev gives, in other words, when we're serious about serving Achyuta, then Baladev gives that strength.
On its own. So we are not addressing him in the prayers as such?
It means what if you don't and you're just focused on Krishna and that, it's fine. But if you do also, then it's not a problem. You know, that's the thing. So you see the acharyas, especially with Lord Nityananda, then there's plenty of prayers in that. But when it comes into Krishna Lila, generally we're only dealing with Radha Krishna. So we're dealing with Balaram as Lord Nityananda.
And then we see him through Guru.
Yes.
As such.
Yes, like that. But also it's just by the grace of Guru, you can get the grace of Gaudiya Thai. Because that means you get Lord Chaitanya's mercy by getting the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Is it something?
Like Achyuta and Baladev, two different personalities over here.
That's a problem?
No.
That's what we're saying.
Yeah,
here's Krishna and Balaram, or Gaur Nitai.
Yeah. So then we are approaching Baladev through the Guru, and that's how we go to Achyuta. That's how it's a link.
No, what it means, yes, you're taking shelter.
We don't pray separately to the two personalities.
Actually. Not necessarily. You can, but it's not. It's not part of the process that's what you have to do. But worshipping Gaur Nitai, right? Because by the grace of Nityananda Prabhu, then we'll get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Does that make sense? But it's not that it's just separate worship of Nityananda separate from Lord Chaitanya. They gently go together. So, yeah. When one is thus attracted again by the rogues of Vishaya, eating, sleeping, and mating, the horses and chariot driver are thrown into the blinding dark well of material existence, and one is again put into a dangerous and extremely fearful situation of repeated birth and death. So it seems that the chariot ends up in a ditch somewhere, as Prabhupada mentioned before. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada comments, without the protection of Gorni Tai, Krishna and Balaram, one cannot get out of the dark well of ignorance in material existence. This is indicated here by the word no chet, which means that no one will always remain in the dark well of material existence.
No, that one will.
That one will.
Without the mercy.
Oh, okay, yeah, I was thinking, this is not making sense. Then I was thinking, oh, that what they were talking about is all living entities at some point go back to Godhead.
That's how you rationalize.
That's how I was going on like that. But it doesn't seem right. Okay. Okay, this is which means that one will always remain in the dark well of material existence. The living entity must get strength from Nittai Gauranga, or Krishna Balaram. Without the mercy of Gorni Tai, or Nittai Gaur, there's no way to come out of this dark well of ignorance. Right? Because he's Sankarshan, so he's the Lord, he controls the false ego, he controls the illusion. He's the master of the Mahatattva. So by getting his mercy, then we can cross over the material existence. Vishwanath Chakrabarti...
If Nittai is Sankarshan, so technically... we don't really need mercy of Gora because that would be enough.
But the whole, why get the mercy of... Well, I haven't seen those for a while. In the tree up there, I think it's those, you know, those things that you, when you take a bath, those scrubby thingies. Huh? Yeah, yeah. It's another one. It's like that. It's called dundul here, and like that. Same thing that's growing there. We always used to have it growing in the school, so that we'd use those. You know, so that's the fun part is one of those that cost $100 over in America, but you know, here they just grow wild. Yeah. Sorry.
I asked the question.
But you also looked.
Sankarshan. So basically, he can do it.
No, but the point is that you get his mercy and then that's where it stops. That's good. You're good. You want it. So therefore, you want to be friends with Krishna and out dancing the Rasa dance with Balaram.
No.
Then it shouldn't go to a step further, because by the grace of Lord Chaitanya, then you can get the mercy. You get the shelter of Radhan Krishna. So in other words, it's part of it's how we move forward. No problem. You're good. We put it into that context, and you're good. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
It's also been said that without the mercy of Advaitacharya, we do not get the mercy of Gauranga. So then, how do we put Advaitacharya in the picture over here in this particular context?
Because if you only mention Gauranga Tai, then Nittai includes Advaitacharya.
Yeah, he includes. But then why would the Vaishnava Acharya write in the song him as separate?
Because in that song they're talking about all three of them. Mm. Like in Nittai Pada Kamala, they don't mention, I don't think, Advaita. Right? But there's other songs that do. The point is Advaitacharya, he's the lord of the mode of ignorance. Mm. Right? So the false ego, that's the whole point. That's the problem. So when you give up the false identity, I'm the controller and enjoyer, then you can get the mercy of Lord Nityananda. So then you can give up all material attachments and endeavor. And then with that mercy, then you can take shelter of Lord Chaitanya and engage in the service of Radha and Krishna. Right? But what we're saying is, because Advaita is expanded from Nityananda. Therefore, Nityananda also includes that. So if one doesn't fully understand all that, and one takes shelter of Nityananda by praying for, you're praying to be freed from material, you know, entanglement or attachment, that means you have to give up, I'm the controller and enjoyer. So it's already included. But if you're being more, if you're more aware of the of more technicality, then you'll understand all this. Otherwise, why the Panchatattva has all the three of them? Is that okay? Okay. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that in the next 10 verses, Narad Muni explains that by the path of Pravriti, one remains a householder. By the path of Nivriti, one becomes a sannyasi. So, okay. According to the Vedas, there are two kinds of activities, Pravriti and Nivriti. Pravriti activities involve raising oneself from a lower to a higher condition of materialistic life, whereas Nivriti means the cessation of material desire. Right? That's, yes?
So in this context, Pravriti would be Varnashram Dharma.
But also Nivriti is in Varnashram.
Yes.
But it just, it, yes, yes, I get, if we're looking at it from fully that one becomes fit to enjoy eternal blissful life, then one would have to count Varnashram, Dharma, Artha, Karma, Moksha within, how you say it? Pravriti. Just the, but, and then being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, that would be Nivriti. So it's the cessation of material desire. But we have to see how he goes, how he's explaining, if he's just explaining on the point of just the consciousness level, or if he's pointing on the level of activities. So then the activities of one in Varnashram, whether he's following Pravriti or Nivriti, will be the same. So the activities of the Grihastha in Pravriti, you know, in Varnashram will be the same as the Grihastha in Nivriti in devotional service. That's where it becomes confusing, because the four Varnas, four Ashrams, can be exactly the same within Krishna conscious as Saddharma or as just Dharma.
Yeah.
That's the thing, they don't really change. You know, the core things don't change. It means how far you might take some of the detail of material advancement, that might be more for someone within the materialistic mentality. This is generally what's confusing.
Yeah. So just trying to clarify this point, that in Ramananda Samvad, when Mahaprabhu said it's external, he means we can take it as a process to attain it.
Yes. It's not...
As a social system.
No. And also it means that it itself is not specifically devotional service.
Right.
Just like saying your kitchen is not devotional service.
Yeah.
But at the same time as the kitchen's used for devotional service.
Yeah.
Right? It, you know, it's the cooking for Krishna. So even cooking is not devotional service. It's cooking for Krishna that makes it devotional service. So many from that point... Probably the most commonly used point to sidetrack Varnashram is this point. He said it, and the Lord Chaitanya says it's external. And then the point,
it's the first sentence.
And then the point is, the person making that statement is, you know, on the transcendental platform acting as a Paramahamsa? No, never. So the point is. The point is that as a goal, he says, what's the ultimate? So then following Varnashram and everything and doing your duty, no, that's a means, it's not an end. So the point is, the discussions with Ramananda Rai, those are Prayojana discussions. So therefore, method has been discussed with Rupa Goswami. And what is the situation, what is the position, that's been discussed with Sanatana Goswami. So these are all within the devotional. Then, how to remove improper, you know, impersonal, you know, all the improper consciousness and understanding of philosophy, that's then with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Prakashananda Saraswati. So basically the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can say, is those five conversations. And then everything in between, and you know, how it's practiced and things like that. Yes, so that's what it's meaning. That's why Rupa Goswami in the Nectar Devotion, he brings up this point that Varnashram, when it says Dasyam, now generally like Shris and Madhuas will translate that as practicing Varnashram in service to the Lord. Well, the Gaudiyas won't. It doesn't mean that they're not practicing Varnashram in the service of the Lord, but they don't call that Dasyam. They call that mood of that surrender Dasyam. Though the medium may be Varnashram and Pancharatra and all these different things, but it's a wider, it's more on the level of the consciousness. Just like Shakyam is that friendship with the Lord, therefore you are preaching. Right? Because Lord wants something done. If you're a friend of somebody, you do what they want to be done. So he wants the preaching, therefore it's done. Right? Lord Chaitanya was in anxiety about how the preaching would go on and that. And then we see that, you know, Rupa Goswami, Nityananda Prabhu, Haridas Thakur, they said, we'll take care of it. You don't worry. You know, that's Sakyam. Mm-hmm. Is that? Yeah. So it's very important, the context, so that people knows, yes, it's not a goal, and it's not because you're following Varnashram. That makes you a good devotee. No, that you're doing things in connection with Krishna, that's what makes you a good devotee. Okay. Yeah. And if you can follow Varnashram, generally means you're purified. That's all. Okay. Through pravriti activities, through pravriti activities, one suffers from material entanglement. But by nivriti activities, one is purified and becomes fit to enjoy eternal blissful life. Srila Prabhupada explains. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 16:7. Pravritim cha nivritim cha jana na vidhur asuraha. The asuras, non-devotees, cannot distinguish between pravriti and nivriti. Whatever they like, they do. Right? So this whole idea of the mod is, oh no, but people want to do. And then they're trying to pass this off as devotional. According to this verse, that's the demoniac mentality. Because I feel like it. That's the authority for it being done. Right? And so before, Vox Populi, Vox Dei would mean a lot of people. Now it simply means me. I said it, and therefore it must be God conscious. Right? And if I get one friend to, you know, nod their head, then that's all the confirmation I need, and then I can say everybody knows this. Everybody says this. Right? And if you can bump into two friends at once, that's even better, right? You know?
It's a majority.
That's definitely. Yeah. No, that's unanimous. That's not, yeah. So they can't distinguish what is the path of detachment and the path of attachment. That's the point. So therefore, attachment's good, detachment's bad. But by this attachment, I'm going to get all the perfection in Krishna consciousness, which is beyond attachment. Right, and beyond detachment. So that's the problem. Whatever they like, they do. Such persons think themselves independent of the strong material nature, and therefore they are irresponsible, do not care to act piously. Right? But pious means according to Shastra. Again, not according to many people get together, what they like, they call that pious, and what they don't like, that's impious. Indeed, they do not distinguish between pious and impious activity. Bhakti, of course, does not depend on pious or impious activity. Right? So, they're not distinguishing means it's what they like, that's what's to be done, what they don't like, what's not to be done. That's why they don't care for and can't distinguish between what's pious and impious.
That's ignorant.
Yes. Bhakti, of course, does not depend on pious or impious. It's beyond. Right? You engage your position in Krishna consciousness. That's what you do. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1:2:6, The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service under the transcendental Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. Right? So if it's motivated or interrupted, then it won't be satisfying to the self. And the whole idea is the self being is aimed at Krishna, right? That's the whole point, is that there's knowledge, there's the arrow, the living entity, and the target is the Lord. Right? Because you're on a chariot. Why be on a chariot unless you're going to shoot arrows, right? Unless you're driving down the path of sense gratification, then hey, you don't even have to bother. Right? Like that.
Then they'll shoot at you.
Yeah, then they'll shoot at you. The problem on the chariot in the path of sense gratification is because the chariots are made where the wheels, they rattle. You know, it makes more noise and it's more, you know, kind of that chivalrous spirit. Because of the rattling, it really messes up the champagne. And so, therefore, if you try to open it in the back of there, it'll be a big mess. So, there are problems with taking this chariot on the path of sense gratification. Right? Well, if you take the path of Nivriti, you don't bother with the champagne, so then there's no problem. Right? Okay. Nonetheless, those who act piously have a better chance to become devotees. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gida 7.16, Chatur Vidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukritun Arjuna. O Arjuna, four kinds of pious men render devotional service unto me. Right? So that means they're rendering service, they're following pious activities. But the point is to please Krishna. So the form is piety, but it's actually devotional service. Right? Not because they're pious, it's devotional service. They're engaging piety in Krishna's service. Right? And so these are the neophytes. Right? Does that make sense? So then naturally that will just carry on as the madhyama. Just the attachment to that piety, that attachment to those positions and identities, that will go away. Right? So, yeah. One who takes to devotional service, even with some material motive, is considered pious. And because he has come to Krishna, he will gradually come to the stage of bhakti. Then, like Dhruva Maharaj, he will refuse to accept any material benediction from the Lord. Swamin kritartosmi varam na yache. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 22:42. Therefore, even if one is materially inclined, one may take to the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram or Gorni Thai, so that he will very soon be purified of all material desires. Kshipram bhavati dharmatma sasvach chantim nigachati. As soon as one is freed from inclinations towards pious and impious activities, he becomes a perfect candidate for returning home back to Godhead. So there was the bodies used to engage these things in the Lord's service, the idea that it gets rid of the need for them. So at that point then, leaving that body, one just goes to the spiritual world. But, so in other words, one takes another material body if there's a need for using that material body. But when one comes to the perfectional platform, there's no need to, therefore the next life you don't get one. Not that that's a bad thing. Not getting one. You get a spiritual body. That's good. Okay. Yeah. So, whatever the position, even there is the material desire, they're taking shelter of Krishna. It's an advantage. But you can't compare that to pure devotional service. That's why then these distinctions are made, so that one progresses. Otherwise, that one maintains that attachment, then their progress will be blocked. That's why they're called obstacles. So, if one hears about and associates with those who are interested in pure devotion, then one gradually, by following the process and connecting to Krishna, give up that attachment. Yes?
Can we say that the difference between piety and devotion is the intent only?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like that. Because the activity is the same. We follow the Vedic activities. So therefore, what makes it karma, what makes it jnana, what makes it bhakti? It's the intent. Because all three are doing the same activity. Like, let's just say someone's a grihastha. They're all three following the same rules of grihastha life. But the karmi is there for the sense gratification and more material benefit in the future. The jnani is there to get liberated. The devotee is there to please Krishna and go back to Godhead. Does that make sense? Yeah. So intent is the thing. That's why then it's not about the secondary, it's about the primary. But that doesn't mean that you can say it's about the primary, not about the secondary, so we can do whatever we want, because then you're throwing in again, that's what the asuras do. No, we do what's recommended, not what we want. Right? You can choose within, if there's options within recommendation, then you choose within that. That's where individuals, that's there. But we don't leave what's recommended to do what we want and then claim that it's exactly the same as pure devotional service. That's improper. Right? So therefore the anarthas that are there, we give those up with time, gradually, step by step. Because we're trying to engage in the Lord's service, by the Lord's grace, then we can give them up. As soon as one is freed from inclinations towards pious and impious, that means you're only interested in how to serve Krishna. Right? He becomes so, but it's not, oh, but what if someone does nonsense? But that's impious. So you're not attached to pious or impious. So if you're not attached to the two, then you would use the superior for Krishna's service. If you're going to be, you're only attached to devotional service. So therefore, you would do activities recommended for devotional service. What do they recommend? The pious, not the impious. But you're not doing it because you prefer pious activities. You're doing because that's what's recommended. Does that make sense? Yeah. Narad Muni continued. The ritualistic ceremonies and sacrifices known as Agnihotra Yajna, Darsha Yajna, Purnamasa Yajna, Chaturmasya Yajna, Pashu Yajna, and Soma Yajna are all symptomized by the killing of animals and the burning of many valuables, especially food grains, all for the fulfillment of material desires and the creation of anxiety. Right? Because if you want material desires, then as Prahlad Maharaj has pointed out, as soon as there's a material desire, that's the moment you start becoming miserable. Because if you don't have the desire, you're fine. But as soon as you have the desire, then now you're miserable. And so then happiness is removing that misery. Performing such sacrifices, worshipping Vaishvadeva, and performing the ceremony of Baliharana, which all supposedly constitute the goal of life, as well as constructing temples for demigods, building rest houses and gardens, digging wells for the distribution of water, establishing booths for the distribution of food, and performing activities for public welfare. These are all symptomized by attachment to material desires. My dear King Yudhishthir, when oblations of ghee and food grains like barley and sesame are offered in sacrifice, they turn into celestial smoke, which carries one to successively higher planetary systems like the kingdoms of Dhuma, Ratri, Krishnapaksha, Dakshinam, ultimately the moon. Right? So generally, that's the problem. Most people complain in the yajna about the smoke, but the smoke's the good part. Yeah. Then, however, the performers of sacrifice descend again to earth to become herbs, creepers, vegetables, and food grains.
That's the bad part.
You got to take the good with the bad. The bad with the good. These are eaten by different living entities and turned into semen, which is injected into female bodies. Thus one takes birth again and again. A twice-born Brahmin, Dvija, gains his life by the grace of his... So that's the whole point. If you do yajna, then there's rains. If there's rains, then there's grains. Right? And so that means then there's future persons who will be doing yajna. Right. You do the yajna, you go to the heavenly planets, from there then you descend in the rain, you know, that same rain from the other person doing it, that brings the rain, that brings the living entities, right, back from there. Then they turn into grains, then they take birth in the womb of the living entities, then again they take up sacrifice. So that's the cycle. So that's why as devotees we don't worry about this cycle.
What about those who are in hell?
Who are in hell?
Like
it doesn't rain so much, so
yes. How they get up here.
No, it's just that you have a certain amount of time that you're there, and then after spending your time there, then you have certain animal life that you'll go through, and after you spend there, then you'll come up to the, you know, the top of the thing, and then either through goodness, passion, or ignorance, you'll come into human life. Okay. So, that's the... Yes. Thus one takes birth again and again. A twice-born brahmana, dvija, gains his life by the grace of his parents through the process of purification known as garbhadhana. There are also other processes of purification until the end of life, when the funeral ceremony, antyeshti kriya, is performed. Thus in due course a qualified brahman becomes uninterested in materialistic activities and sacrifices, but he offers the sensual sacrifices and full knowledge into the working senses, which are illuminated by the fire of knowledge. Srila Prabhupada comments.
The antyeshti is for purification.
It should be?
I don't know. Like, I don't understand, so that's what I'm asking.
It's one of the samskars, so of course it will be purified.
Purified?
Yes. But the point is...
I mean, who will be purified? The soul? By doing antyeshti?
I mean, the body is also purified, because ash won't give you a problem. See, is the soul. You've done all kinds of good and bad activities, right? You do the antyeshti right, then the good activities go with you to next life. Otherwise, they become stuck. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So, therefore, it's purification. That's why it's a samskar.
So, if you don't do that, means good things don't go with you?
Basically. It's considered one quarter of one's nature. If the antyeshti rites were done or not. Because if they weren't done, that will then define nature of this life. If they were done, that will define nature of this life. What you were last life, then is your basis of what kind of family you're going to take birth in, but the qualities that you'll have then have that aspect. So 50% of your nature is coming from last life you can do nothing about, right? Then there's birth, so the parents could do something, therefore there's garbhadhan and proper consciousness, so they can have an effect that you can't actually. Right?
75.
Yes, sorry, 75. So 25% is association. So that's the point. But since the purpose of human life is devotional service, therefore, if we take up devotional service, then whatever the position, everything will be purified. It'll become all auspicious. Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments. Those interested in materialistic activities remain in the cycle of birth and death. Pravritti marg, or the inclinations to stay in the material world to enjoy varieties of sense gratification. This has been explained in the previous verse. Now in this verse it is explained that one who has perfect brahminical knowledge rejects the process of elevation to higher planets and accepts nivritti marg. In other words, he prepares himself to go back home, back to Godhead. Footnote 26. It is said in Mundaka Upanishad 1.2.12, Brahmano nirvedam ayat nast Nastyakrita kritena. Not merely by performing duties, but by renunciation, a Brahman attains the company of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Jiva Goswami, Priti Sandarbha, Anucheda 332. The following statement of Mundaka Upanishad 1.2.12 affirms that only transcendental knowledge will help one approach the Supreme Brahman. Pariksha lokan karma chitan brahmano nirvedam ayan nastya krita kritena tad vigyanartam sagurum eva abhigacchet Samitpani Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. Prabhupada quotes this one a lot. Seeing that the celestial material planets, which one may attain by pious work, provide only temporary benefits, a Brahman, in order to understand the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, should humbly approach a bona fide spiritual master learned in the scriptures and full of faith in the Supreme Lord. In contrast to the temporary material benefits obtained in the celestial planets, the Supreme Brahman is the reservoir of eternal, limitless bliss. Srila Baladeva Vibhushan, Govinda Bhashya. So this was Govinda Bhashya quoting Srila Jiva Goswami. Yes, which is quoting the Upanishads, which Srila Prabhupada always quotes, yes. Those who are not Brahmanas but atheists do not know what is Pravritti Marg or Nivritti Marg, right? So Brahmana means one who knows Brahman, so that means devotees are all Brahmanas because they're theists. Right? Okay. They simply want to obtain pleasure at any cost. Our Krishna consciousness movement is therefore training devotees to give up the Pravritti Marg and accept the Nivritti Marg in order to return home back to Godhead. This is a little difficult to understand, but is very easy if one takes to Krishna consciousness seriously and tries to understand Krishna. So if it doesn't make sense, then we simply have to try a little more seriously in Krishna consciousness, then it will make sense. But not that it doesn't make sense, so it's not important, because I'm so smart, therefore everyone should just do what I understand. Does that make sense? Yeah, we avoid that. Narad Muni continued, "The mind is always agitated by waves of acceptance and rejection. Therefore, all the activities of the senses should be offered into the mind, which should be offered into one's words. Then one's words should be offered into the aggregate of all alphabets, which should be offered into the concise form, Omkara. Omkara should be offered into the point, Bindu. Bindu into the vibration of sound, and that vibration into the life air. Then the living entity, who is all that remains, should be placed in Brahman, the Supreme. This is the process of sacrifice. On this path of ascent, the progressive living entity enters the different worlds of fire, the sun, the day, the end of the day, the bright fortnight, the full moon, and the passing of the sun to the north, along with the presiding demigods. Then he enters Brahmaloka. He enjoys life for many millions of years, and finally his material designation comes to an end. He then comes to a subtle designation from which he attains the causal designation, witnessing all previous states. Upon annihilation of this causal state, he attains his pure state," right? Because the causal state is I'm the controller and enjoyer. But in that pure state of Vasudev Sattva, he can see all previous states that were there. Right? So that makes sense. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
How can he leave this causal state, being on the Brahman Bhuta platform, and attain his pure state?
Because Brahma Bhuta is going to come because of the devotional service. So here, when we're talking about Brahman, we actually mean devotee. But the point is that means what they're following the yoga practice, and that this is what they will be doing.
So they will never attain their pure state then?
No. But I'm saying, let's say in Satya Yuga, they would use this method, or another, they can use these methods. In Kali Yuga, we generally don't use this method because we don't have enough focus. You know, we'll be going along, going really good, and then we'll hear, you know, dee 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 dee, like that, and then that's it, you know, and then we're done. Right? Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that, therefore, we're chanting, but it means in the process the soul is crossing these, though one may not be aware of that. All right? Because all these different things have these different positions up to Brahmaloka, but then one goes beyond that. So in devotional service, we don't go through these technically like that, but some do. I think the Madhvas, they go through this whole process. It takes them 14 lifetimes to get back to Godhead. So they're going through all these things. You know, so that means all these different positions are there. You know, fire, sun, the day, the end of the day. That's what was mentioned before about the Dakshina and other, Okay, like the kingdoms of Duma, Ratri, Krishna Paksha, Dakshinam, and ultimately the moon, like that. So these are all those different areas.
How can devotees offer the activities of the senses into the mind?
It means the senses are active, right? Are you aware of those, what you're doing with the senses?
Yeah.
But sometimes you're not. You're just doing things and someone asks you, why are you doing that? You didn't even know you were doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So that means you have to be conscious to be able that it goes into the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Then from the mind, then it keeps going up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So then the mind, then it's not just doing what it wants. It does what intelligence says. And that does what then, what, you know, like this, so it keeps going.
Mm-hmm.
So the process of elevation is the same. So we have, it means, it's a yoga process, so there's always, yoga is yoga. Just in the Ashtanga yoga, then it'll look more like this, but technically this is what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You're going through these different stages. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay, so then, upon annihilation of this causal state, he attains this pure state in which he identifies with the Supersoul. In this way, the living entity becomes transcendental. This gradual process of elevation for self-realization is meant for those who are truly aware of the absolute truth. After repeated birth on this path, which is known as Devayana, one attains these consecutive stages. One who is completely freed from all material desires, being situated in the self, need not traverse the path of repeated birth and death, even though situated in the material body. One who is fully aware of the paths known as Pritayana and Devayana, and who thus opens his eyes in terms of Vedic knowledge, is never bewildered in this material world. Srila Prabhupada comments.
And what's the Pritayana?
I think that means, Pritayana means the Pravriti. Because there you have to worship the forefathers, do all those, because you want to elevate yourself to the moon and all that.
And Devayana is Nivriti? That's the one that we just...
The sun.
It's the sun. Nivriti. So you're going through the sun. Because the other, you notice it only got up to the moon. It said the final stage was the moon. But in this one, then after getting the moon, then you go to the sun. Right? Pass with the... Okay... And a progressive living entity, okay. The bright fortnight, the full moon, right? That's where the other one ended, right? It said, and ultimately, like the kingdoms of Dakshina, Duma, Ratri, Krishna Paksha, Dakshina, ultimately the moon. So they stopped there. So that must be the Pitriyana. Because Pitri Loka, though they're situated with Yamaraj and his planet, the heavenly aspect of the planet, they're also connected to the moon. That's what the shoes and the umbrella are for. Is somehow or another, I'm not sure if they go back and forth regularly or, you know, I'm not sure how it works. But here you see is then the full moon and the passing of the sun to the north along with the presiding, then he enters Brahma, so they just keep going. So in other words, the activities technically of Pravriti and Nivriti are the same up to that point, but then Nivriti keeps going. You know, just like the path up to liberation is the same as those who are only interested in moksha. But the devotee keeps going. So the Vedic path, that's why Krishna says there's one path. So that means you're doing the same things. It's just how far you go on the path. Like if you're going from here to Krishnagar, here to Ranagat, here to Calcutta, it's the same road. It's just a matter of how far on that road you go. Yeah. No. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments. Acharya Vanpurusho Veda. One who is guided by the bona fide spiritual master knows everything as stated in the Vedas, which set forth the standard of infallible knowledge. Right? So that's the point. We want infallible knowledge. Because modern knowledge, every few years they have to change it and then they have to totally throw it out. Right? You know, that's just the way it goes. It's the method. So, but the Vedic is infallible. It's always good. So if you can't see how it's good, then be sincere, serve the spiritual master. Then, by pleasing Krishna, it will be revealed. So if one doesn't know, continue doing devotional service, it will be revealed. Not that one doesn't know, so therefore, you know, it's not real. That's it. As recommended in Bhagavad Gita, Acharyopasanam, one must approach the Acharya for real knowledge. Tad vigaran artam sagurum ivavigachet. Mu. 1, 2, 12. Oh, okay. I was thinking. Okay. Okay. One must approach the Acharya, for then one will receive perfect knowledge. When guided by the spiritual master, one attains the ultimate goal of life, right? So that's why we stick to what Prabhupada says, that mood. We even approach the previous Acharyas through our Acharya. That's what Rupa Goswami says. So anything that what we see is the previous Acharyas are giving, you see is that if it's seen in the proper light, they're the same. Just, you know, further some little detail, some other aspect, but there's no difference. It's not that, oh, Prabhupada's giving basics, they're giving the higher. No, he's giving the highest, but then through approaching him, you can approach the other, and then you get finer understanding. So, yes?
So those who are not connected to the Parampara, they can't really see much.
No, they can't. So that's the problem, is what they see, they think is, you know, that's all there is. You know, instead of being what you see is what you get, what you see is all you get. Yeah, so there's no scope for going higher. You have to take shelter of the spiritual authority. And that whole point is that means taking shelter of the instructions of the founder, Acharya. So for us, means for the next 10,000 years, approaching the spiritual master means approaching someone who can teach us what the founder Acharya is explaining. Then we'll understand what the previous Acharyas are saying. This way then we can. That makes sense. So it'll always be based on Prabhupada's teachings. Not that, oh, that was for the 60s. No. This is eternal. That's why it says infallible knowledge. The 60s were fallible, so it's not connected with that. Yes.
For some devotees, they ask a question and we try to explain, but it's obvious they can't understand because there's no connection to the parampara.
Yes.
You know, really upset and annoyed.
So then you try something more simple, get it down to, you know, figure out what's the essential point, the principal point, because in other words, what they're becoming bewildered on is the detail. But the principle generally you can explain. You just have to then get down to what exactly is the principle, and then what kind of example and what wording, what tone would they could catch that. So having caught that, that will be all the farther you can take them, and then they'll be happy. Right? Then by understanding that, they'll be able to next time go a touch further. Right? So that's it's a gradual process. That's why when somebody understands, that's where you stop. You know, we have a tendency is that when they start understanding, then we get inspired and keep going. That's when you lose them. But when the guy, you explain it, come to the point, and then they go, oh, okay, yeah, that's where you stop. Yeah, that's the whole point. You have to control the mind and all that, and so therefore then it's that. And then they'll be able to take it and then use it, but then now you go, oh, that's great, take them to a higher level, then they can't use it. And then they don't get, you know, of course, because they went through and accepted it, they get a benefit. But if there, then it's practical for them, that's when you... Yeah. So, like you said, you have to control the senses, because otherwise you want to, you get fired up. Yeah. Okay. Okay. One must approach the Acharya, for then one will receive perfect knowledge. When guided by the spiritual master, one attains the ultimate goal of life. Right? So that's the idea. Srila Jiva Goswami points out in his Paramatma Sandarbha, Anucheda 61, that in the next five verses, 57 to 61, the material world is described as non-different from the Lord. It's amazing, isn't it? In Bengali, the term is checha mechi. which Checha Mechi, you know, when you get a whole bunch of birds together and they're all like that. That's Checha Mechi. So that's, you know, it's just a bunch of going on, bunch of noise that doesn't really mean anything. But, you know, whatever, it's, they're happy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Guided by the spiritual master, yes. The point is, when it said guided by the spiritual master, it means the whole process. Because ultimately, Krishna is the Adi Guru. He's the original Guru. Then representing him, you have Srimati Radharani and Lord Baladev. Right? You know, and then you have the Parampara coming down for us, Srila Rupa Goswami, like that. That comes to us, we hear it, you know, from the Adi Guru, the founder Acharya, like that. Then we hear that, what he's taught from other devotees, those may be Siksha or Diksha, but the point is it's the knowledge. One will receive perfect knowledge. So it's the Siksha aspect of the line that what is looking for. Now, within that, that might be the getting Siksha from the Diksha Guru, getting Siksha from the Siksha Guru, getting Siksha from the Adi Guru, getting Siksha from Krishna, like you read Bhagavad Gita, he's instructing Arjuna, you're getting his knowledge directly from Krishna. But for us to understand it, then we then get the purports from the Parampara. So that's what it's talking about. Does that make sense? Yeah. So when it says spiritual master, it means that generic process. It can be anyone in there. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So when you say that people who are not connected to Parampara means those who don't accept, don't surrender, have no faith in Parampara, they're not connected, even if they follow Krishna. Prabhu was saying.
Yeah. I got that there's two aspects. There's going to be those who are devotees, but they're not necessarily very advanced in the area you're talking about, so when you keep trying to explain it, then they get frustrated and everything like that. So therefore, we discuss that. Then you have those who are non-devotees, so it's the same principle, though it's generally even less. So you stick to logic, you stick to the principles, then basically even the karmi will catch it. But if you get into any details, then that's generally where they lose it. You know, either their connection to it, understanding of it, or becoming emotionally, you know, unpleasant. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Also, I was thinking, I mean, Prema Dwani prays this, that Sri Guru Vaishnava is charming.
Yes.
Guru and many.
Yes, 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 yes.
So we pray to many, we don't pray just one.
One, yes. That's the whole point. When we only see Diksha Guru and that's it, and nobody else, everybody else is a schmutz or something, then that's going to be a problem. Because then we won't really be able to take advantage. Like that. So that's why Sri Gurun means all. But it doesn't mean that we're whimsical and that. No, that's why there's Parampara. There's who's where in the line. And who has what position and everything. Right? So in other words, what Krishna says is the standard. How do we understand what Krishna says? That's what Rupa Goswami gives. How do we understand what Rupa Goswami gives? That's through the previous acharyas. How do we understand the previous acharya? That's through the founder acharya. Right? And then how do we understand the founder acharya? Then that's because we've taken shelter of those who are followers of the founder acharya. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, Sri Guru.
Here also Sagurum.
Sagurum.
In the Bhagavad Upanishad?
Yes. Well.
Thanks,
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Maybe by the end of the course we'll all be talking in Sanskrit.
That is.
Just focus.
Yeah.
No prajalpa, no.
Yeah. Okay, then. Okay, the material world is described as non-different from the Lord. Narad Muni continued. So now we've gone through all these, we've come up to this point here. So then. It It's an important aspect, you know, how he's non-different from the material world. Because then you can see the Lord everywhere and everything, whatever you're doing. Yeah. Narad Muni continued, he who exists internally and externally, at the beginning and end of everything, and of all living entities, as that which is enjoyable, as the enjoyer of everything, superior and inferior, is the supreme truth. He always exists as knowledge and the object of knowledge, as expression and the object of understanding. As darkness and as light. Thus he, the Supreme Lord, is everything. Although one may consider the reflection of the sun from a mirror to be false, it has its factual existence. Accordingly, to prove by speculative knowledge that there is no reality would be extremely difficult. Right? The sun is there, you have a mirror, it's reflecting the sun. To say that the reflection is not real, it is real. Right? So, yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, how can the sannyasi say that everything is Brahman when everyone perceives difference between enjoyed objects and enjoyers? The non-dual knowledge of Brahman is the method for persons who worship Brahman. It does not accept perception of reality of the universe with variety and with various shaktis, right? So that's how we're able to see Parabrahman. We see how the Lord is non-different, but at the same time different, how he's entered everything through his shaktis, right? So it's non-different from him. That's how we can see him everywhere. Well, for these impersonalists, worshippers of Brahman in this way, they have to give up everything and all their connection with it. That becomes very, very difficult. While for the devotee, he simply has to connect everything to Krishna. Right? Very hard to not use the senses when all there is senses and sense objects. That's what the material world is made out of. Right?
That's the point of Hamsavatara and
Nirmukhita. Uh-huh. Yeah, so then we're trying to just connect the senses to Krishna through using the sense objects. Right, so that's why then it's done in devotional attitude. So therefore, it's recommended because since it's being offered, the senses through the sense objects are being offered to Krishna. How would Krishna like the senses and the sense objects to be combined? Since they're both him anyway. And if we say is no, it can be I can do it however I like. Again, it goes back to the asuric mentality. Like that. So that's the. Yeah, so to stop the mind, then I think Hamsavatara says that's for fools. Mm-hmm. Right, that. So therefore, Mayavadis, even though they're so smart, such big scholars, are actually fools. Because they think they'll stop the mind when it's impossible. Yeah. Okay. In order to convince persons qualified for jnana of the falsity of the universe, the theory of a Brahman producing an unreal world is praised in 8 verses. The devotees say that somehow or other one should absorb the mind in Krishna. Similarly, the jnanis say the purpose of their method is to see only Brahman. Since the world is perceived to be real by the mind, it is difficult for the mind standing alone to refuse to accept the world on the basis of statements of denial. In spite of the theory of a false world produced by Brahman, one should learn the truth from scriptures. It has already been stated that the jnani falls down by considering that the names, forms, and abode of the Lord are unreal. See, the problem is with the approach, is if all this is unreal, which is actually is still the Lord, then we'll take it, what is the transcendental aspects of the Lord, as to also be false, then one will fall from the transcendental platform. Excuse me. So, taking that, okay, the aspects here are false because they're not actually, the soul can't gain happiness from those things here. That's not fully wrong, right? But it's not fully right in that, no, but the living entity can engage the senses here in the Lord's service. That they don't understand. But at least the premise of the negative that you have to give up the attachment to the material world, that's correct. But then the problem is because that's based on form and action. Therefore, the spiritual world, which has form and action, they will also consider that must be given up. So this is where they fall down. Yes.
So the process of negation, it's incomplete action.
Yes, it's incomplete. So you're only trying to negate to get to what's the positive, but because they think full negation is the goal, not coming to the positive, that's why then they can't maintain it. Right? That's the point. So, but the idea is that since they're on the path of jnana, in that process, if there's some sincerity, they may come in contact with a bona fide Vaishnav. And then from that come in contact with the personal understanding, so the real understanding. Then all that advancement that they've made on the path of Nivritti now can be used to advantage in devotional service. Otherwise, then it's a very, very difficult path. But, you know, it's, yeah, totally dry, you know, it's like, you know, licking the sand in the desert or something, you know. Tough, yes, on a hot day.
Do they fall down because they commit offenses to the Lord? Or?
That's there, because the point is it's by following the Lord's process on Nivritti that they're able to come, they get that position. But when they don't accept the Lord's position as transcendental, then why would they be transcendental? Right? Because their transcendental position is being granted by the Lord, but they don't accept that the Lord is transcendental, so why would they be transcendental? Does that make sense?
So it's more the consciousness which makes them... I mean, they don't become completely... The consciousness is not transcendental.
It's transcendental in that it's not connected, let's say, with the material world. But it's not transcendental in that it's connected with the spiritual. So, because they don't connect to the spiritual world, they can't remain on the spiritual platform. That's the point. They always will fall down. That's a guarantee. But it's just some fall down a little earlier or never make it. So basically, Mayavadis generally will never come to the platform of actual Brahman realization because they're offensive to the Lord. So how can they get... Because the Lord, he's Mukunda, he gives the word liberation. An actual impersonalist, a Brahmavadi, they could come to that platform. The Mayavadis, generally, they don't. You know, they just end up in a situation, Lord has, you know, it doesn't have any arms or legs or this or that, so they end up as a blade of grass which has no arms or legs. And this big, big scholar, everyone stands on their head. Yes? Yes. Could be worse. Yeah. That's Achyutananda said that's where the Buddhists end up. Because if those into Brahman, they go to Mahakalapura, but those who are into nothingness, where is nothingness? So they stick them in the Garbhodak mud, so therefore then you know, that's as good as nothingness as they'll get. Okay. Okay. This is also to be stated in appropriate places after this. Bharata, in order to awaken King Rahugana, also said the world is unreal. O King, this carrier, who is a transformation of earth, walks on the earth for some reason. Above his feet are ankles, calves, knees, thighs, waist, chest, neck, and shoulders. Above the shoulders is the wooden palanquin, and in the palanquin is the person called the king of Sauvirya, who, blinded by illusion of false identity, thinks, I am the king of Sindhu. Oh, okay. That makes sense. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12, 5-6. So then sometimes it is brought up about unreal, real and unreal. So we will also say it's unreal, but what it means is the concept. We don't mean that there's not somebody sitting there who thinks he's the king. But what we're saying is that his thought that I am the king, that's the illusion. That's the whole point. It exists, but our perception is unreal. That's the... Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.